following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. We're going to get you ready for the ECAC Hockey Tournament quarterfinals action this weekend. Four series going on, highlighted by number 6 seed Union going up to number 4 seed Dartmouth. RPI, the 12th seed after their upset win at 5th seed of Clarkson last Saturday. They'll go to Quinnipiac, the top seed in the tournament, of course, the defending national champion. The other games, 8th seed at Harvard is at number 2 Cornell, and number 3 Colgate hosting number 7 St. Lawrence. As we're going to get you set for all that action, we'll preview those four series with Dan Rubin of USCHO.com a little bit later. I'll have interviews with Union players Ben Tupker, Kyle Chauvet, and Josh Nixon. They'll talk about getting ready for Dartmouth. Plus, they're getting ready for final exams. That's actually started on Thursday. And then Reed Cashman, the Dartmouth head coach, will join me. We'll talk about his team and the amazing run that they've had this season. Rob Kennedy, the voice of Dartmouth hockey on ESPN Plus, will join me. We'll talk about this series as well. So a lot to take in on this edition of the Parting Shots podcast. So stay tuned. We're going to have Ben Tupker, Kyle Chauvet, and Josh Nixon here on the Parting Shots podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hey, I'm Frank Caliendo, pretending to be Morgan Freeman, maybe even a little bit of John Madden or Robert Downey Jr., comedian, impressionist, playboy, philanthropist, maybe not the last two. And you're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast as we get you set for the Union Dartmouth ECAC Hockey Tournament quarterfinal series, best of three. Games we played Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock at Thompson Arena in Hanover, New Hampshire. And if there's a game three needed, that'll be at 4 o'clock on Sunday in Hanover. Union and Dartmouth split the regular season series with each team winning in the other's arena. Union took a 5-1 victory over Dartmouth in January, a game that didn't have a couple of key players for each team. Union was without defenseman John Prokop for that game. He was serving a one-game suspension that was handed out by ECAC Hockey earlier that week. And then Dartmouth goaltender Cooper Black, of course, a 6'8" goalie, he was out because of illness. The rematch last weekend of February, the last home game of the regular season for the Garnet Chargers. It was a 3-3 game early in the third period, and a little miscommunication led to a shorthanded goal by C.J. Foley that made it 4-3 early in the third, and Dartmouth added another goal shortly after that, and they held on for a 5-4 victory. And that win put them ahead of Union into fourth place going into that final weekend of the regular season. And you know, Union sought a shot when they beat Cornell, but some things didn't go their way on that Friday night, particularly Clarkson upsetting Quinnipiac on the road in Hamden, New Hampshire, Hamden, Connecticut. And then the final day of the season, Dartmouth won its game against Yale, and Union lost to Colgate. So then Union ended up finishing sixth in the ECAC hockey standings, and they faced Brown last Saturday in the first round single elimination game. Won that 6-0, very convincing game. We talked with Josh Halji, the head coach of the Garnet Chargers, on Wednesday's podcast about that game. And it was, and I said this to him, it was, we're sort of after that first media timeout. seems like something kicked in with Union, and they just took control of that hockey game, and they needed to do what they needed to do, just overwhelmed with Brown team that was dealing with injuries, and once they got up 3-0 in the second period, it just really, in effect, I thought that game was over. I thought Brown just looked spent. They just couldn't have an answer to try to come back in that game. So here we are, games 1, 2, and 3, three game series. Third time the Dartmouth and Union have met in the postseason. They have been in the quarterfinals before, and the last two times were at Union in 2013 and 2014, and Union swept those games on their way to ECAC hockey tournament titles. On Tuesday, I had a chance to speak with Union players Ben Tupker, who seems to be a regular on this podcast anymore, Kyle Chauvet, and Josh Nixon. Here's what they had to say. And, of course, Union not only facing Dartmouth, but they got to deal with the final exams that started on Thursday.
Well, guys, you have really, in effect, two opponents this week. You got the Dartmouth, obviously, you've got to prepare for, but also you have to prepare for the final exam for the second trimester. How are you guys balancing that, Ben?
I know some guys' schedules are obviously a little lighter than others, but I think everyone's really balancing it well. I think that as a group, everybody's, really structured and good with time management. So, yeah, I don't really see that playing a factor at all.
Josh?
I think this week you just got to take advantage of the days before these games and make sure school's obviously priority, but these games are definitely a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, when we're at the rink, kind of put school to the side and focus on that. And I think when you have time outside of the rink, just making sure to get work done early on in the week so we can focus on the games this weekend.
Yeah. Obviously a familiar opponent in Dartmouth. You split the season series. You won up there back in January, lost here in February. How important is it knowing, how confident are you guys going up there knowing that you've won up there already?
Yeah, no, I think we're confident. I think we're playing good hockey right now. We're really, kind of meshing well as a group, finding our identity. So, I think it's great that we went up there and won once, but, it's a completely different game, so we just want to go up there and play our game the way we know how to. So, yeah.
Josh?
I think that regardless if we won or lost at Dartmouth this year, I feel like we're playing really good hockey right now. We're very confident, and I think we're just really excited to get this quarterfinals going.
Yeah, I think at this time of the year, like any previous results don't really matter. Obviously, we're familiar with them just because we've obviously played them twice, but at this point, it just kind of comes down to who plays within their structure a little bit better and kind of who competes harder.
Ben, I know they're technically the higher seed, but based on the season series, you guys feel like you're the better team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that with the way our group's playing right now and the confidence and belief we have in each other, we're, confident going into any game against any team. So, we obviously have beat Dartmouth before and they've beat us, so we know it's going to be a hard series. But, yeah, we're definitely going up there confident in ourselves.
Josh, what was the factor in the losing here? Was it more of just puck mismanagement, just not being as physical? I mean, how important is it to be physical up there, and especially the way you guys played against Brown on Saturday?
I think we may have just got away from our game a little bit when we played Dartmouth here, but since then we've had some of the three games after that we played some pretty good hockey. So Dartmouth's definitely a really good team, but I feel like this time of the year the seeds don't really matter. It's whoever's going to play well that night, so we just got to be ready for Friday.
Kyle, do you feel like what did you guys do really well in that Brown game? That you're hoping to transfer into this weekend.
Yeah, no, one, I thought we had the energy, we were excited, ready to compete, and I think we were hard all game on them. I also think played a good defensive game, kept a lot of the shots to the outside, made my life a lot easier, which is nice. I think we were just really connected throughout that game, and it helped us. Yeah.
How important, Ben, is it to the way you played on Saturday to bring that this weekend?
Yeah, I think that the way that we played on Saturday is kind of the standard that we expect every night. I think we kind of just played to our identity, and we're hard on the forecheck, our backtracks, and then played it in and around the net a lot. So I don't think that was anything that's uniquely specific to Saturday. I think that's something that we kind of just expect going forward every night.
Josh, is this road trip format a little bit easier than your typical one, because you're playing a game on Friday night usually, and then you're shipping off somewhere else for Saturday? Maybe if there's some things that need correcting after Friday, you're right there in the same place the next day.
Yeah, obviously it's a little different. playing to the same team twice in a row. But I think it definitely is a benefit. I feel like you get those corrections after Friday night. Hopefully it's a win and just keep it going on Saturday, honestly, yeah.
What's going to be the key in this series, though?
I think, like we've said it, but just, like, sticking to our identity, the way we know how to play, having confidence as a group, and I think just, you know, working really hard and just competing the entire time.
How important will it be to get that jump in game one on Friday?
I think it's really important. Obviously, in a three-game series, you want to get that jump and an advantage early. So, you know, I think we want to take it, obviously, one game at a time, but, like, just take the game in segments and try to win, like, each five-minute segment and so on, and take it from there.
Okay. Yeah, all year we put an emphasis on kind of starting really well the first 5 to 10 minutes, so Saturday's no different. I think, you know, we always try and be a heavy physical team, so that's going to be a point of emphasis for us right off the bat.
Ben, do you feel like there's an advantage to you guys having played recently and played so well, whereas, you know, Dartmouth is coming off a bye?
Yeah, definitely. I think it, you know, helps just the fact that we feel fresh and confident in the group and, you know, don't necessarily have a couple weeks to kind of sit and wait. Obviously, I think it depends on the team, whether that works out for them or whatnot. But just speaking about ourselves, I think that, you know, we're all happy with the fact that we're fresh off Saturday.
Were you guys surprised it was Dartmouth and not Colgate with the RPI pulling off the upset there on Saturday night?
I mean, obviously Clarkson was the favorite, but, I mean, in a one-game playoff, anything can happen, and I think that proved it. So at this time of the year, you can't really take anyone lightly.
Now let's talk with Dartmouth head coach Reed Cashman, who has done an outstanding job getting the Big Green to a first-round bye, the first one for the team since 2011. Dartmouth was a team that won just 5 games overall last season, finished in last place in ECAC hockey with just 4 victories. The ECAC hockey coaches in their preseason media poll did not think much of the Big Green. They picked them to finish 11th this season. Well, they persevered. They were, I mean, the resilient, just pesky team. Went their records 11-9-9. They found ways to get points, either shootout victories, overtime victories, and they've done a great job. And they're going to be a team to be reckoned with. And I mentioned in one of my opening faceoff columns, I think this is a dark horse team to win the ECAC hockey tournament title. So they'll have to go through Union first to get to Lake Placid, and then that's going to, like I said, it's going to be an interesting series, and I really see this series being going 3 games. So here's my conversation I had Tuesday with Reed Cashman. Reed, it's been a while since Dartmouth has been in this position to have home ice in the quarterfinals of the ECAC hockey tournament. I mean, how pleased are you with the way things have turned out during the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited with kind of the growth from the last 2 years to this year, and proud of the group in particular, kind of the last, you know, second half of the year. We're able to get some results, right, and put ourselves in this spot. So exciting for our fans and our alum and the Upper Valley to host at Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, the team wasn't expecting me. The coaches picked you guys to finish 11th in the preseason poll. To finish 4th, did that take you a little bit by surprise? I mean, even though the team has played well, I mean, did it even take you a little bit by surprise?
The media had us at 12th, too, so we had that one, too.
Now, we actually didn't do a media poll this year.
Well, then whoever put it out, maybe that was just college hockey. College hockey news. But I don't know if surprise is the right word, but I think our team, staff and players, I think we did a pretty good job of just not being so concerned about the results. You know, obviously we're competitive, you want to win, but understanding just the day-to-day and having a really high standard every day and focusing on growth and kind of, and, you know, figuring out where you end up. So I don't want to say we're surprised, because we didn't really – we thought 11th or 12th or whatever, we thought we could be better than that, but it didn't really matter what we thought. We had to go out and prove it. And I've been around the ECAC long enough to know it's not easy to get into the top four, and that's kind of always the goal. Even when I was at Quinnipiac, it was like, let's get in the top four, because it – gives you a chance for success in the playoffs. So, like I said, we're just excited to be in this spot.
At what point in the season did you realize that you could challenge for that spot? And was there a certain point in the season where you thought, hey, we have a shot at this?
Honestly, not until the second to last weekend of the year, realistically, because you, it was so tight. At one point, we were in 10th, you know, not that long ago, but you just could see how tight it was. And then we went on, you know, we got some wins and some ties, and it was really going up to RPI Union there. And you're starting to look at the math, knowing that I think Union was a couple points ahead of us. And you kind of start to do the math. If you could win Friday versus RPI, and we didn't, it's just internally, right? And then you got that win versus RPI. So then you go into Union being like, well, if you can get the 3 points, you can jump them, and now you're in a spot. And so really, our staff internally was the second to last weekend. And we really didn't talk about it to our team until that last weekend, because that was the first time we controlled our own destiny going into that final weekend of, hey, if we get our desired results, we can control finishing with that home ice and that bye.
Yeah. After that game when you were here at Union, I said, and I've been saying this all year about your team, I've said you've been a pesky team, and you said resilient. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
I think I've said a few, and I might even said it that night, I've said it a few times, we're just committed to being in the fight, and we're committed to being in for the whole 60 minutes or 65 in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case the last couple of years for us. Maybe we started in the fight, maybe we got going and finished in the fight, but our program hasn't been committed to being in it for the whole time. And this group is, and so resilient, pesky, I don't know what the adjective is, but I just, because of that, because of the mindset, because of, you know, we were down 4-1 to Harvard at Harvard, and we just stayed in the fight, and we got ourselves back into it. And when you play the top teams in your league, you're gonna take some punches, and it never really deterred us from staying in that fight. And because of that, we hang around until the end, and we've gotten more results this year because of that.
Yeah. How tough was it, you know, coming out of COVID? Because I mean, you get hired and you don't have a season, your first season there. I mean, how difficult has it been, the road to get to this point?
No, like I it's such a challenging, question. Like, we never used COVID. Like, it was never a crutch. I mean, the reality is that there's other teams outside of the Ivies that can have a fifth year player, right? And mm-hmm. I think that makes a difference. But I don't know how much the pandemic challenged us. I think new staff, learning Dartmouth admissions, Dartmouth financial aid, as much as me and Jason were very comfortable with the ECAC, you know, learning Dartmouth and learning the Ivy, I think there's an adjustment there and a learning curve there. I think that was more to do with the pandemic. You know, we didn't lose any guys. Drew O'Connor signed, I guess, but we didn't lose anybody to the transfer portal. And I think one of the biggest things this year this is year three of me, Jason, and Troy Thibodeau being together. And I think that's really made a difference of our identity that we're trying to form and our staff and how we recruit and how we coach. And I think that's been really beneficial to have some continuity on our staff.
The season series was a split. You know, obviously, you guys won down here at Union. Union won up there at Dartmouth in January. What was the difference, you think, in the two games?
On the second one is with about 30 seconds to go in the second period, they had a post shorthanded, and then whatever it was, 4 minutes into the third, we scored shorthanded. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's that, you know, like, one goes posting in, one goes posting out. I don't think we played our best the first game. I think they were great. I think they've been their compete level is so high. I think it's as consistent as anybody in our leagues. And so I think the second night we were more competitive. And then it's, you know, it's ultimately a one goal game, right? And so it's that shorthanded goal.
Yeah, and of course, the game up there, Cooper Black was out because of illness. I mean, was that a factor, you think?
Not really, because the Union really outplayed us. They were just the better team. I felt bad for Rowan, because he, if you look at the goals that we gave up, they weren't. It was backdoor tapping, second wave with multiple options. I think there's two backdoor plays that you it didn't matter who, you know, Hellenbuck could have been playing, you know, it wasn't going to matter. So that wasn't really a game changer for us. That was, you know, like I said, Union really outplayed us the first night. And I thought the second game was just even, and I would anticipate, you know, a pretty even series coming up here.
Hey, who won specifically on Union do you concern yourself with?
Well, Prokop's the best D in our league. I mean, he's one of the best D in the country, and I think he should be an All-American at the end of the year. And he's one of those defensemen that can change the game. You know, he defends hard, and he's mobile and plays a ton of minutes and excellent on the power play. And so he jumps out off the page. You know, I think one of Union's strengths is they have a ton of depth. Like I think their top three lines are all equally dangerous. I think they got five guys with 10 goals plus and a bunch of other guys with eight or nine. And mm-hmm. So I think Prokop's a game changer. And when you have a game changer defenseman, that goes a long way. And then I think the depth of their forwards is extremely impressive. And then I would say the physicality of their defensemen is something you have to be aware of.
Well, you ought to know something about game-changing defensemen. You were one of those in the ECHC hockey when you played.
Yeah, I couldn't skate like Prokop does, though. I can tell you that right now.
What is going to be the key in this series?
Yeah, I think it'll be like our last game. I think it'll be special teams. You know, I think it'll be an individual effort. I think it'll be a save. Like, I don't think there'll be a, man, if we do this, we'll be fine, you know, type of thing. And I think Union's the same way. I don't think Union will be like, well, as long as we take care of that, it'll be an easy series type of thing. I think we're very evenly matched. I think both programs have belief. You know, I think more than anybody else in our league, I think both of us play with a little bit of a chip on our shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we both are. Josh is getting his culture instilled there, and he's got his guys believing in playing at a high level, and I think we're trying to do that same thing. So special teams, you know, who makes the play in a tie game, who wins third periods, you know, I guess if you want one answer, I bet the team that wins the third period is going to end up winning the series, because I think it'll be close both games or all three games. So
any concern, you obviously got the week off last week, any concern about a little rust heading into Friday's game?
Yeah, that's always the, you know, we were pretty fortunate at Quinnipiac to be in this spot. And that's always the balance. You know, I think it used to be more of an advantage when the first round was a series. Mm-hmm. You had to play two or three games and get beat up a little bit.
Yep.
But if you could do it, if you had the choice, you're going to take home ice, you got to take the rest. And any rust that might appear, Union's going to, you know, try to beat that out of us pretty quick. So, we'll get into it. I'm not overly concerned about the rust. That's something I said earlier. We've been in the fight all year, so I anticipate us being really excited and ready to go.
We'll continue our preview of the Union-Dartmouth series with the voice of Dartmouth Hockey on ESPN+, Rob Kennedy. And I got to apologize to Rob. I forgot to mention him in my promo for my podcast on Thursday at the end of the Josh Algy podcast. So, Rob, my apologies. We'll talk with Rob in just a moment. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Just didn't want it bad enough. That should have been an easy win. What were you doing out there? You gotta hustle. You could have made that play if you'd been open.
On the car ride home after the game, when you think you're helping by telling me what I did wrong and what I need to work on, all I hear is that I'm not good enough, that I'm supposed to be perfect, that it's not okay to lose. On the car ride home, all I need to hear is how much you love me and enjoy watching me play. That my worth isn't determined by my performance. That even on my worst day, I am worthy. That you see me learning, growing, and doing my best. And that is enough.
This message presented by NISFA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Hi, this is Union College men's hockey head coach Josh Hoge. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast as we continue our look at the Union Dartmouth ECAC Hockey Tournament quarterfinal series. My next guest is the voice of Dartmouth Hockey on ESPN Plus, and you'll hear his call of the games this weekend on ESPN Plus. It's Rob Kennedy. Rob, well, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ken. I'm glad to be here.
Well, what do you think of this series? I mean, I don't think many of us expected this. I think a lot of people are thinking Union Colgate because nobody expected RPI to beat Clarkson on last Saturday. But this should be a good matchup. I mean, these teams, you know, split the season series and winning in each other's barn. So what are you expecting?
I don't really know what to expect. I mean, I saw the game. I watched the game at Union on ESPN Plus. Of course, I saw the game here. And it was weird here because two really good players for both teams are missing. Prokop didn't play for Union. Cooper Black didn't play for Dartmouth. So it's kind of weird to see. And, of course, that was back before Dartmouth really started to heat up and play well. And then, of course, that shorthanded goal of the Union game really kind of changed everything.
Yeah.
Very, very even contest for the most part. But that shorthanded goal was the difference. I'm just expecting it to be very close and very tight. And it's going to be a situation where whoever can take advantage of the opportunities when they arise is going to win. I'm not sure how many opportunities there'll be.
Well, talk about this Dartmouth team a bit. I've always described them this year as a pesky team, 11-9-9 during the season, overall record. When I talked to Reed Cashman after the Union game here a couple weeks ago, he said they're resilient. What makes this team pesky and resilient?
I think it's just right now their work ethic and their confidence overall. One thing I've really noticed about them in the second half of the season is just how confident they seem to be on the ice. And first half of the season, you mentioned all the ties that Dartmouth had in nine. We were calling them the Prince of Ties in the intro to our broadcast because it seemed like every week they were tying games. But, you know, if you were with Dartmouth last year, you know, in a team that just won five games in the season and they lost a lot of games they were in, it seemed like every close game that finds some way that the other team would score and, you know, you'd lose a one goal or two goal game with an empty netter. And, you know, they started tying those games. So we're thinking, you know, this is progress. And then they started winning more and more of them. And just as that kept happening, Reed Cashman says, you know, winning is a skill like anything else. You have to learn how to do it. And I think the guys have learned how to do that quite a bit over the course of the year and have gained a great deal of confidence in doing so. Reed always said he wanted a team that was tough to play against. And I think he had that a little bit even last year because there weren't many times that Dartmouth was blown out. But this year, they're really hard to play against, just very resilient. They respond well after conceding goals. And they're just playing with a really high level of expectation and confidence right now. And I think that's the difference that I've seen out of them over the course of this year is watching that confidence just rise and rise and rise with every successive win.
You mentioned Reed Cashman, the head coach, former outstanding player at Quinnipiac. He took over from Bob Gaudette after he retired. And of course, the first year that Reed was the head coach, they didn't play a game because of COVID, one of the eight ECAC hockey teams to sit out that 2020-21 season. What's the road been like for him to get the program, you know, coming out of COVID, to get to where they are now? Because, me, like I said, this team was picked in the coaches' poll to finish 11th, and they finished fourth. Right. So what's the progress been like under Reed?
It's been slow but noticeable. Just when you watch them every game, again, they lost games last year. They won five games, and they finished last in the pairwise. But it's going to sound funny to have me say that, maybe make me seem a bit of a Pollyanna, but I didn't think they seemed nearly that bad and watching them all year long. It was just they didn't get the results. And Reed said, and I talked to him over the first year that we were playing back in 21-22, and he mentioned that, you know, results may not be what you want to see this year. We're looking to kind of make slow growth over the course of the season. And it kind of reminded me of the NHL team I follow, the Montreal Canadiens, who are kind of the same boat, you know, trying to rebuild, and it's going to be little by little and piece by piece. And, you know, you had Clay Stevenson leave. That was a big loss overall because I don't think people were expecting him to leave after that one sophomore season he played. And that made things a little difficult. Cooper Black stepped in, but, you know, going right back to square one as a younger goaltender. And it was just little things, just kind of getting the people he wanted in place, building the culture that he wanted as far as the effort and accountability. And he's done that. I mean, that's the thing. And people were somewhat surprised. You know, Dartmouth took a risk, I think, when they extended his contract and re-signed him because, you know, if you just looked on paper at the results, you'd be like, well, what are you signing a guy who's not winning very much at all and again, losing quite a bit. But Dartmouth knew to give him time, and I'm glad they did because the results, you're starting to see him really pay dividends now.
And of course, their top two players, on Luke Hames and Cooper Flinton. Hames just seems to score goals against Union all the time. How good of a player is he?
Hames' release and his shot is just mesmerizing. When you look at Hames and his numbers, since I've been here about 10 years now, but even since 2000, there's only been a couple of guys who've scored more goals in their first two seasons than Luke Hames has, and both those guys end up playing in the NHL. Drew O'Connor's there now. He had 38 goals. Lee Stempniak is there with 33 goals, and Hames is the guy in third place with 28 goals. So he's just been outstanding, and he and Flinton have made a really great team. And well, they had Nikita Nakora out there too, who was, I think, a guy who would likely have made the ECAC all-rookie team if he had not managed to be hurt near the end of the season. Those three guys, just the way they started to click and connect and set up offensive plays in the ice, it's the best line I've seen here, with the exception of maybe that Timber line with O'Connor and Quinn Foreman and Will Graber. But I think that line that we have now is even better than that.
Yeah. What impresses you about Union?
Union's just a pain. I mean, with Union, what impresses me most is there's guys in that team I really like watching. Chaz Smedrud, I have a great sports hate for. I mean, when he plays against Dartmouth, he's a guy I can't stand. It reminds me of Henry Bowlby, for example. I just couldn't stand watching Henry Bowlby play against Dartmouth because he always seemed to find ways just to stick the needle in. And Smedrud's like that. Now, that being said, I love watching him every other night. He's one of my favorite players in the league. But they're just a pain. They're a pain to play against. And you look at them, and honestly, when you kind of see Union on paper, outside of Prokop with those 27 assists and maybe Hanley with 21 or 22, they don't jump out at you as far as, great offensive numbers, but it's someone different every day. And you've got a bunch of guys on that team who can just step up. It's going to be a tough matchup for Dartmouth. I see them Dartmouth and Union being somewhat similar in that regard as far as just tough teams to play against, resilient teams that, really, I don't think anyone really wants to play this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, Union's got five players with at least 10 or more goals, led by Svetrus, who's on a five-game goal scoring streak with 14. Brandon Burroughs, who didn't have much of a success at Clarkson in 9 games he played last year, he's got 11 goals. Liam Robertson, Caden Viegas, Carter Corpy each have 10. So, I mean, this is a team that's really it's been a while since they've had some offensive threats, and I think that's what they've really picked it up as the season. I mean, their problem from watching him, live at Messerink and on TV is, they'll go one night, play great, which, if you look back at the Harvard Union weekend at the end of February here at Mesa, Union looked great against Harvard, blew them out 6-2, and it was 6-0 after two periods. And then the Dartmouth game, they were just a step slow, and puck manager was an issue. And, of course, that turnover that led to C.J. Foley's shorthanded goal, and what a goal it was. I mean, backhand to get over the right shoulder of Kyle Chauvet. It's those type of games that I think ended up costing Union a shot at first round bye, and that's why they had to play last Saturday against Brown.
Yeah, no, it did. And, that's, I think, with Union as well, it's the consistency factor. And I would have said the same for Dartmouth really up until the last month or so. They've been way more consistent on the ice over the last month. But Dartmouth had the same issues as well. You never know what you're going to get, especially on the road. You can play real well and then get down to Connecticut and just get blown out, for example, at UConn. And, I just didn't know what I was going to see for the most part. They had that Brown and Yale road trip that was a disaster for them back in early mid-January. But since then, they put it back together and been very consistent. And Cooper Black's been kind of a steadying presence in goal, which I think is a real big, a real huge thing for Dartmouth. They've needed that. They needed it last year when they weren't scoring many goals. Now they're scoring even more, and that takes some pressure off Cooper, but he's played very well, and it'll be a big factor as far as how the series will go for the Big Green.
Speaking of Cooper Black, at 6'8", I mean, that's tall for a goaltender. I mean, how important is his size?
Tall for anyone.
Well, especially by this day and age, though, with goaltenders doing the butterfly, I mean, Ken Dryden was tall, and I don't think he ever did the butterfly. I'm old enough to remember that because having watched him play. But how important is it for Cooper to maybe even if he goes down, he still covers a lot of the net. So how important is it for him to be the make those key saves?
It's been huge, and again, maybe not so much over the last few weeks as Dartmouth's scoring goals in a much more regular clip, but. Yeah, I don't think Dartmouth's in first place without Black playing as well as he played in the first part of the year. Taking some of those games and those ties, with Quinnipiac at home, that's a that was a team that I think anyone would have expected Dartmouth to get any points from, let alone two in the shootout win. And that was what Cooper was doing, was he was really kind of allowing the Big Green to be in position to get points as opposed to coming out empty-handed like they did last year. It's huge. And Casey Ditzel, the Clarkson broadcaster, coined the nickname for Cooper Black. He referred to him as the Green Monster, which I think is really perfect for him at 6'8". And he moves so well. You know, you mentioned that butterfly. He's able to get down really well. His skating's great, and his lateral movement from side to side. You just don't expect a guy of his size to be able to make the kind of moves that he makes, but he does, and that's why he's been such a dangerous goaltender and why he's been such a big piece of the Big Green over the last couple of seasons.
How have the fans responded to this team?
They're starting to pick up. I mean, it's been tough drawing fans over the last couple of years, but the team hasn't been winning. And as time's gone on over the course of the season, you see more students show up. We've had a couple of games that have been, we have to sell it with Vermont, had more attendance in some of the games recently. I wonder what the playoff series is going to bring, because, you know, you have all year to kind of hype up your late games, and then playoffs are a new thing. You're not really planning to necessarily play, and if you are, you don't know when. And I'm not sure, you know, even in you know, Reed Cashman might have thought so, but I'm wondering how many people close to the Dartmouth team really would have said, yeah, I think this year they're going to go from last in the pairwise to fourth in the ECAC and get a first-round bye for the first time in over a decade. I don't think people expected it. But I'm hoping, and they put out some social media posts and Reed did a video, I'm hoping they get a good crowd this weekend, because I think the team deserves that after the way they played this season. Dartmouth hockey has been, you know, this is as fired up, I think, as people have been for this team, and the expectations are as high as I've ever seen them since, you know, kind of coming aboard with the school in 2015.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed, you know, Thompson Arena, and when I was, you know, traveling with Union, there's always great sight lines, and of course the press box being a little elevated on the side, and it seems like it's a building, if you get people in there, that could be intimidating for a visiting team.
It gets loud. I mean, and Reed's mentioned that. He's, you want to get 3,000 people inside the Thompson Arena, and when you do, it really rocks. And now, we saw it against Princeton, of course. We kind of always see that against Princeton, given the tennis balls tradition that may or may not continue, given that we got penalized three times for it this year. But that, you know, we get crowds for Cornell, sometimes for Harvard, but it started to pick up, and, you know, UNH and in Vermont, of course, the Ledyard, but it started to pick up a bit as the season went on. And, you know, the crowds weren't sellouts. There's still plenty of seats, but they were definitely better than they were a year ago. And I think that's only going to increase as this team continues to grow and develop.
Rob Kennedy, we'll watch you on watch your coverage and call the games this weekend. And hopefully if there's a game three, I'll maybe see you up there on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see. And I wouldn't be shocked at all. In fact, if he asked me right now to bet if it's going three, I would absolutely say I think it's more likely in my mind to have a third game of this series than not.
Yeah, I think it's going three, too. Two teams are, you know, tight, and it's going to be no, I don't think there are many blowouts in this one.
I don't think so either. So we're threading three very tight games. And, you know, obviously we have two different hopes as far as who's going to Lake Placid in a week's time. But either one, you know, and I don't think it's one of those situations where, you know, I always read your picks and the picks that everyone makes in the ECAC. And I wouldn't be surprised to kind of see a pretty good split among people, you know, or neutrals especially, who's going to win this series, because it really is a toss-up and up in the air, and it's going to make for an exciting game to watch and, in my case, to broadcast. I can't wait.
All right, Rob, appreciate a few minutes, and we'll talk down the line.
Yeah, it was fun. Always happy to talk to you.
All right, that's Rob Kennedy of ESPN Plus and Dartmouth Hockey. Dan Rubin of USCHO.com joins me. We'll look at the four quarterfinal games coming this weekend. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Andrew Waite. He's a dedicated journalist with a passion for research and a commitment to getting all sides of the story.
Whether it's a local issue or an upstate trend, I do the stories and interviews that shed light on what's important to you.
Stay informed. Read Andrew Waite in the Daily Gazette.
It's my job to offer commentary about what's happening in our community and what it means to our readers.
The Gazette, reporting based on accuracy and integrity.
It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Union College head football coach John Drock. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with the Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast. We're talking ECAC hockey tournament quarterfinal round action, and our friend from USCHO.com, Dan Rubin, is back with us this week for the quarterfinal rounds. And Dan, almost chalk in the first round, but RPI had to play spoiler and upset Clarkson on Saturday, and really just a surprising game. RPI, I think we both said that that game was not going to be competitive, and boy, were we wrong.
I like to think that Dave Smith like played the copy of the interview over and over for his team and basically said, hey, guys, this is what's on the table for you right now. This is what people think of us. And then they went out and won the game. And who knows? Maybe it's still going to be over and over in the locker room because that is the thing that they can have. Only in college hockey can this world see advance like that in the first round.
And that may go to prove that maybe we need a best of three format because, it's great the RPI won, but I mean, that's where you want your best teams playing in postseason, advancing. But RPI became the first 12 seed to advance out of the first round since 2011 when, ironically, Colgate beat RPI at RPI, and then when it was the best of three series. Of course, Colgate ended up pulling off the Capital Region Daily Double because the next weekend they upset top seeded Union to go to Atlantic City for the Final Four. But well, let's look at the games. Let's start with the RPI-Quinnipiac matchup, and I'm going to not going to say it's not going to be competitive because I know I caught a lot of crap from some RPI fans about that in my column last week, but it's a tall task against for RPI against Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac is just too much firepower.
I mean, this seems good. I mean, we forget because they've had kind of a rough go of it for a little bit in the second half of the season, particularly in January when they tied Northeastern and lost the Colgate-Cornell trip, both ends of that, and only took 1 point along the way. The loss to St. Lawrence didn't look particularly good for various parts of the second half of the season. Ironically, the time that they flipped and turned the whole season around, I felt, was the Union RPI weekend when they scored 13 goals and basically beat the snot out of two teams at home.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tall order in general to try and compete with the number one seed in the first round, in their first round, in their first series, not the first round, but in their first series, because emotions run high. They're usually amped up. That said, Quinnipiac, for all that they've won, for all that they've won regular season championships, they've been top seeded, they've gone to the national tournament. This has been their Achilles heel. The ECAC tournament has been their Achilles heel for the better part of, the last decade or so?
Yeah, they've only won once.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the 2016 team, I don't remember if that was the year. I don't think that was the year that they went to the national title game and lost to...
Yeah, North Dakota. That was it, yep.
Yeah. And I feel like that team was not even the best team they've had. They've had some teams there that are insane, that just for whatever reason bomb out in the postseason. And one thing that they've run into, I know, is you catch fire in goal, and that's a problem because the system for Quinnipiac is so defensive and designed so well around playing the full sheet that when they've needed to historically, when they've needed in the playoffs to shorten the bench, hit the gas pedal, play more aggressive, that's not Quinnipiac hockey. Like, that's not what we've come to know about them. Whereas you face a lower seed that's playing with reckless abandon.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the goaltender. Jack Watson was awesome up at Clarkson for RPI. 34 saves, including 20 in the third period. And the last 7 minutes of that game, Clarkson was pressing for goals. They got two of them, and they almost got a third, but Watson kept it out and with like 1.2 seconds left. And that was all short. I mean, Jack Watson's had an up-and-down year. He missed some time because of injury. And when he's on, though, he could steal a game or two.
Yeah, and that's something to be aware of because you cannot lose a game this series. Like I said it multiple times. I know I said it to you. I said it a couple times. We talked about it a bit in my column this week, where Quinnipiac, because the league strength in the pairwise is so low this year and is so weak, Quinnipiac, by virtue of what's happened, has fallen down to the 8-9 spot in the pairwise, where the cut line is probably going to be 12 or 13, based on the fact that that the Atlantic Hockey and the CCHA champion have to be the 15 and 16 teams in some capacity.
Yep.
you run into 14, you run into 13, depending on which team wins Hockey East, the NCHC, the cup line is going to be pretty high this year. And so Quinnipiac cannot lose a game this weekend because pair-wise,
tongue-tied.
RPI is like 53. And so if you lose one of those games, before we even factor in any game behind you, you're down to about 11 or 12. You lose two, it's over. You're down to 17, it's over. It's done.
Then you got to win the tournament.
Yep. Yeah, it's essentially what it comes down to is they can't lose too many games against teams that are seated behind them in general right now with the way other games are going. And frankly, you know, outside of Cornell, there's not really a team pairwise that protects Quinnipiac. And that goes back to the best of three conversation where you want them to move forward. Like Harvard might not have provided them much protection. They're in the 40s if they had to play them, even if Clarkson had won that game. But you can't lose these games.
Yeah.
You just cannot lose these games. Losing one means you have to make it pretty deep by winning the other two. You have to be able to play your way into the conference championship to protect your seat. And that's the big thing. Protecting the seat doesn't necessarily mean making it or not making it. You lose two games, it's over. You're not making the tournament. You're going to fall to 17, and you're not going to have an opportunity to climb back up. Yeah. So, but if you lose one, you have to win some of those other games to avoid being a three seed or a four seed.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the next Capital Region team that won last Saturday. That was Union, a dominating 6-0 win over Brown. A couple of shorthanded goals, and they outplayed Brown. It was like after the first media timeout in the first period, it seemed like a switch clicked on Union, and they just took control of that game, and they did not let Brown breathe. I mean, Brown has always given Union fits, and Brown did not give Union fits. Union was all over him, got a 1-0 lead late in the first period on a Caden Villegas goal. Two goals in less than 3 minutes, including a shorthanded goal by a freshman defenseman, DJ Hart, his first career goal. They wrapped up with three goals in the third period. I mean, how impressed were you with the way Union played? I mean, to me, this is the type of team that we've seen glimpses of this where they can dominate a game like that.
Yeah, did I say something along the lines that like made Josh Howji mad? Like about the was it something I said? Was it something I did? Because you didn't need to do that to my poor Bruno. That was uncalled for. That was. You could have shot wide in the third period. No, they look good. That was a good game. That was a good full team effort from a team that's very deep. And you know, Brown has had its issues this year. I know, and injury wise, they kind of fell apart down the stretch, big time. But you still got to go out and win that game. And I thought the Union offense just looked so darn good. The defense didn't even really need to worry about too much. They came out and just steamrolled. You were right. After that media break, I mean, Caden Villegas scoring twice, he looked great. Chaz Svedrud, who you know I love him as a hockey player, scored.
Yeah, five.
DJ Hart,
Chaz. Chaz got a 5-game goal scoring streak right now.
Yes, 5-game goal streak, and he's turning up. Is he the first? I think approaching the first 15 goal scorer too in a while. So I think he's up to 14 now, right?
Right.
I think one of those was 5-0. I could be wrong on the way it bounced in, but it was. Look, Brown, you didn't give any power plays. Nobody really took any penalties till the end, and even then, the power plays that were given were useless. It was surgical. And now you get to go to Dartmouth, which, in terms of the top four, in my mind or in my opinion, is probably one of the best matchups because while I like Dartmouth, I feel like Dartmouth took advantage a bit of the format of getting point, going to overtime, being the force things and get 2 points in the shootout to get into a situation where they're the number four seed. I think they're good. I mean, clearly you're good if you jump up to the top four, but this is a good matchup because Dartmouth also hasn't been in a position where they've been, I'm not going to use the term battle tested. That's the wrong term. But they haven't been in the position that, you know, with a hot Union team coming in.
And I've always said, I mean, I talked to Reed Cashman earlier. I mean, I've always I told him that I've always thought this team this year has been pesky, but also he mentioned in a couple weeks ago when I talked to him after they won here at Union, that they're resilient. And I think they are. I mean, they've been battling. I mean, they were picked to finish 11th by the coaches in their preseason poll. But I mean, I think Reed's going to end up being coach of the year in the ECAC hockey, the way he's got this program back on track. As you said, a lot of ties, but you win shootouts, get a point. Hey, it adds up after a while, and that's how they end up getting fourth. So, I mean, this is a position Dartmouth hasn't been in, I think, since 2011 when Bob Gaudette was coaching. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come out. Of course, they have a great goaltender in Cooper Black, who stands 6'8". He didn't play in the first matchup at Thompson Arena back in January because he was ill, but he could be the difference maker for them.
You know what I love about Dartmouth is when you go back to the Harvard game and you go back to the St. Lawrence game a few weeks ago, was that they were losing both games and forced it to an overtime. And then the Harvard got the second point. Dartmouth got the second point in the shootout against St. Lawrence. But they had to score in the third period to tie that game each time, and they did. And that, to me, is a sign of a team that's, would I like to have seen what they could do later on in that game? Absolutely. What makes Dartmouth so tough is that, which is they just keep coming and coming and coming. And they have learned a lot from the fact that they've lost a lot and that they've played a lot of good teams along the way. They've been really good, especially at home, where they've only lost three games. And I think two of them were maybe the beginning of the season or, the middle of the season. They did not lose a ton of games at home. Of course, one of the games they did lose at home was to Union. But this is still a team that, like I said, that when you kind of put it all together, we could be looking at a very, very good weekend matchup between these two teams. It's not going to be one of those ones that you look at and say, oh, this is going to be a blowout one way or another. I think, I wouldn't be shocked if one team sweeps. I wouldn't be shocked if this thing goes three and it's a 3-1 goal games. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be just a fun weekend.
Yep. I mean, they also take advantage of mistakes. I mean, in the Union rematch back in February, the Union mishandled the puck while on the power play, and C.J. Foley ended up scoring a shorthanded goal. Great play. I mean, he roofed a backhand shot over the right shoulder of Kyle Chauvet, and they just seem if they'll pounce on those mistakes, and they'll take advantage of it and get those goals. So, I mean, you got to watch that with their tenacity.
And Reed has that team playing like him. Like, that's the thing is, like, you look at a team and you look at the attitude of the coach, the way the coach even handles us with media, and then you see the team play, and they play a lot like him, which is, it's hard not to like Dartmouth. It's hard not to like the way they play the game, their attitude, their approach. If something goes wrong, they push by, they rarely get mad, but they're a fiery, kind of plucky team. And if you were to mention to me one coach along the way or one team, like, that to me is exactly what Reed Cashman is. He's tenacious guy, fun to be around when you talk to him. I think he was a great addition when he coached with Rand on the U.S. World Juniors. Mm-hmm. I think he is just the right guy to mix together a team and say, hey, let's go have some fun. Why not? Why can't we win every game? And then they go out and hey, all right, we're down one. All right, let's go have some fun, play with it. Let's see what we can do with this. And I think that sometimes gets lost with some coaches or who are in a situation who maybe don't have that approach and don't have that, I wouldn't even say level-headedness because they've all been in that situation in some capacity. But Reed, just his approach, he's a different cat, and I like that about him.
Yeah. Dan Rubin of USCHO.com joining us here on the Parting Shots podcast as we preview the ECAC Hockey Tournament quarterfinal round action, which gets underway Friday. Let's head over to Ithaca and Lina Rink, where two Ivy League rivals will face off, Harvard visiting Cornell. I mean, Harvard kind of shocked that there was a 1-0 game. Great play and goal by, if I pronounce his name correctly, Aku Kosakinvu. I think I botched that. 38 saves in that game Friday. And the one goal that was scored by Ian Moore in the first period, that should have been stopped by Arthur Smith. No screen. Shot from the top of the left circle. Just went over his glove. And then Harvard just played defensive hockey the rest of the way and let the goaltending do the work. 16 saves in that third period alone. So looks like Ted Donato picked the right goaltender to start on last Friday.
Well, I'm not trying to pronounce his name. I got a thick Boston accent.
That's what his first name is.
Yeah. Well, I got a kick. He was like, what'd you do right? Well, they told me to stop the puck, so I stopped them all. I think it was like his post-game interview. He was like, I just decided I was just going to stop every puck. And I was like, you know what? I like that. But he was a wall. And what I loved about this was that, you know, Harvard, they seem to be catching a bit of fire. Like, they really do. They won their way into having home ice. They had that little bit of slip when they lost to Union, when they lost to Clarkson, when they, you know, taking RPI, they wound up winning that shootout. But since the Beanpot, they have been a different team. They've looked good at various times during the second half of the year. And I really, really like the fact they won a 1-0 game. I thought that was going to be a 6-5 game.
Yeah, I did too.
And the fact that, I mean, I think we even said this is going to be a 6-5 game. Yep. Like, there's no way either team can stop the other team.
That just proves we don't know anything about hockey.
Exactly. We continue every time we open up our mouths, this happens. but I like the matchup, like, because you know that both teams are going to be fired up. Cornell won the Ivy League championship, for those who care. But Cornell Harvard, I mean, it's Cornell Harvard. It's going to be wild. Like, you know, educated, you know, middle New York fans, central New York fans out there, they love the fact that it's Harvard. This is going to be wild. And Wild Lineup is a place that gets, what's the word I'm looking for? Fun. Yeah. We'll use the term fun.
Yeah.
I've been on the receiving end of many a unique chant with the Brown Bears.
I think Harvard won its first game of the season at Cornell. So, I mean, it's got off to a good slow start. And then, of course, Cornell returned the favor at the Bright-Landry Hockey Center. So I think there's going to be a defensive games. I mean, maybe three. I think it's going to be a sweep for Cornell. But, you know, if Harvard can, you know, get a goal and then play defensive hockey. I mean, you know, Cornell sort of stumbled there after that long unbeaten streak. They've, you know, been in a slump the last five games. Of course, they won the last game against RPI the regular season, but I could see this thing going three.
Me too. I think Cornell, back when Cornell beat Union, beat RPI, beat Brown, they looked like a team that was going to the tournament. And I think they had three losses at one point. They were something like 15-3, or I don't remember what it was, but I just remember they were so good. They were 16-4, and I remember saying I wanted Cornell to have more games. Like, I wanted them to have that extra six games because I could have pictured them taking on a whole bunch of other teams, gaining some other RPI points, and then boom, they're coming into that with, we'll say, 21-5, they're an 11 seed into the tournament, and they're coming into the tournament. They're coming into the ECAC playoff as the second team. Instead, what happened was they fell apart, and that's not to say that they fell apart and they were a bad team. They lost a lot. None of that. They just lost, and they lost a bunch of games at a really bad time to teams that they couldn't lose games to. From a pairwise standpoint, they could not tie Yale. They tied Yale. Could not lose to Clarkson or tie St. Lawrence. Both of that happened. They lost the Union. That hurts. And now they're in a situation that they have to win their way back in because they're on the wrong side of the 16.
Yeah, and they almost lost that St. Lawrence game. They were, you know, about a minute and a half away from getting shut out up there until two extra attacker goals were scored. So, I mean, speaking of St. Lawrence, they're heading to Colgate to take on the Raiders in a three-game series. It'll be a busy time at Class of 1965 Arena, because the Colgate women are hosting NCAA tournament action on Saturday. So, Colgate, I wasn't sure what to expect from this team this year. Of course, Donnie Vaughn, the longtime head coach of the Raiders, retired after last season, finally winning an ECAC hockey tournament title. And Mike Carter, one of his former players and once an assistant coach with Colgate, comes in. And I mean, if it wasn't for Dartmouth, I mean, Mike Carter could be, I think, he is a candidate for a coach of the year, getting this team to a third place finish after they were expected to finish sixth.
I think they're good. I won't say great. I'm not sure that they're a great team, but I think they're a good team. And I think what makes them a good team is the fact that they played really well the second half of the season. And they've only lost, I think, three games since the second half started. They're still under technically under 500. They're a good ECAC team this year. And they're facing a team that they very easily could have swept in St. Lawrence had they not, and very easily could have been swept. I mean, if they lose that, they lost that game in overtime after they had a 3-0 lead. That was not great. I mean, that you're a 3-0 lead in the second period and you lose. This conversely, the other game that they played, they scored two power play goals. If St. Lawrence doesn't give up two power play goals or doesn't give up, you know, even gives up one of those two, now we're dealing with a completely different set of circumstances. So it's interesting. I think that's kind of the term of the week. I think it's another good matchup for both teams that could easily go three. But at the same time, you know that they have to win because they have to win to get themselves in. And, you know, best of three series, we're going to know best team wins. Legitimately, the best team will win in that series because they're going to earn it.
Yeah, I think Colgate has more of a offensive firepower than St. Lawrence does. I think that's going to what's going to come down to.
Yes, yes, 100%. You look at Colgate has the second hottest offense, second best offense in the league, and something like 75% of their offense on the season has come from conference games. They have allowed the same amount of goals, and they've allowed the same amount of goals with the same amount of shots taken on offense. So very evenly placed. But when you're dealing with a team that has close to 30 more goals and the same amount of shots, you're dealing with placement, you're dealing with efficiency, you're dealing with the different things of where they're going to shoot, which is going to negate whatever St. Lawrence could take to the table. At the same time, you're playing in Colgate, which I think makes a difference. I know they have a big weekend going on with the tournament. I know that the women's team is hosting, and that's phenomenal. I think Stonehill is getting sent there from Massachusetts. So shout out where my best friend went their second year as a Division I program,
yeah,
winning the Neuhaw, getting sent to Colgate. So that's always exciting for those of us in Massachusetts. But that's going to be a busy weekend. And if things start going well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. In Hamilton, there's not a whole lot to do when when you leave campus. Those people are going to show out for that series because, you know, they're going to be there for it because there's a lot of Colgate pride that weekend.
Yeah, that's the one thing. In the years I've covered this league, I mean, in the years I went, when I traveled, I mean, go to Star Ring, they don't show up. And I mean, you look at some of the attendance figures with the new rink, it's the same thing. I wonder, what is there? There's nothing to do. As you said, nothing to do in Hamilton. They should be going to these games.
So it's funny. When I've been out there, I felt that the rink was full, but some of the times it was quiet. Like, yeah. I would throw 65%, 65%, but it'd be the polar opposite of Lina. You'd make that trip and you get Lina first and the place would be jam-packed and everyone would be losing their mind. And then you'd go to Star and it would be like, okay, are these people are we still in the airplane hangar? Like, what's going on here? But they wouldn't get as loud. So what I'm hoping is that bringing the national tournament there for women's hockey, bringing everything together, like they need to show up and they need to show out. And I think that is something that is like, if you were to take a couple of different places and host the second round, I would feel, or the quarterfinals, I would think like, okay, Dartmouth has had some really good crowds this year. And Dartmouth has been a fun place for fans to come back in. And I know Reed has mentioned that to me, that they've been great. We know Cornell is going to be insane. We know Quinnipiac is going to be well-drawn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. St. Lawrence is going to the one place where that crowd really, really needs to show up and do something special there because there's so much going on. Like, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they're going to. But at the same time, they need to prove it because you can't show up, sit on your hands in a playoff series when you have that much going on.
Yep. So, Dan Rubin, who are your teams that are going to advance to Lake Placid?
I root for chaos, so I really want RPI. Like, I just want to set fire and anarchy to this. I do think one road team is probably headed. I don't think we're in the days of the top four making it anymore. I'm putting Dartmouth on some severe watch this week. I know that they've been pesky. I know they've been plucky, but I'm putting them on watch. So I like Quinnipiac to make it. I do like Cornell to make it, even though I think that series is going three and I think it's probably going to be a 5-minute major called at some point. just to see that coming.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go off the board a bit. I'm going to say Union, and I'm going to give St. Lawrence the benefit of the doubt. I think St. Lawrence is my wild card here. I think they could make it.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend. Of course, you will be following all the coverage. And Dan, appreciate a few minutes. We'll do this again next week as we talk to about the championship round.
And right, by then, we'll all be thinking about where we want to do our Michael Rubin for the impression.
You're right. Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks again for doing this.
Of course. Thank you, Ken.
All right, that's Dan Rubin from USCHO.com. We'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest in just a moment. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
It's the most historic conference in college hockey. It's a battle night in and night out. ECAC hockey, an iconic conference home to 12 of the most prestigious universities and programs in the world, and showcasing the best student athletes in the sport. Top-notch facilities and arenas, incomparable traditions, passionate fans, alumni who go on to become elite professionals, leaders, and champions. ECAC hockey, there's no experience like it.
Hi, this is Clarkson Hockey play-by-play announcer Bob Alfeld, and you're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 4 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was David Clements of Mechanicville with 50 points. David wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, David. The VIP winner was Scott Lusher of Capital Land GMC with 5 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Ben Tupker, Kyle Chauvet, Josh Nixon, Reed Cashman, Rob Kennedy, and Dan Rubin for being on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at Schott, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good hockey. And we remember singer Eric Carmen, who passed away last weekend at the age of 74. He had hits with the Raspberries and as a solo artist, including All By Myself and Hungry Eyes. Here is the Raspberries' breakthrough hit, Go All The Way. Rest in peace, Eric. I'm complete, I could be.